Welcome back, dear students. Welcome back. Did you listen to the first session of this presentation at least once more? Remember, these MP3 files are easy to put on a CD or in your MP3 player or most of your phone, and you can listen to them while you commute to work or commute to school or on the treadmill. Yeah. Okay, great. Let's get started. All right. This session is going to describe the major asset classes, the major investment classes, I call it the overview of investment types. And as we discussed in the previous session, chapter 3 is where the book gives their overview of investment types. My problem with Chapter 3 is that they go into too much detail, especially about derivatives, which I don't want you to even... All I want you to know is what we were going to discuss, yes, what we discussed in our previous presentation and what we discussed today, okay? You don't have to understand calls and puts and all the other good stuff that we'll discuss at the end of the semester, okay? But before we start our overview, we're going to take a look at a couple of slides that discuss return, investment return, and investment risk. Because as we go through this presentation, I want you to keep in mind those two attributes of investments. I want you to keep in mind, well, you know, the type of returns we can get and the type of risks or the amount of risk we're going to take on to get those returns. And it turns out it's not a fair fight. Because as we see on slide number 15, measuring investment return is straightforward. How much did you start with? How much did you contribute? And how much did you wind up with? Now there are two returns that we'll discuss. The total dollar return, which is the absolute return on an investment measured in dollars that accounts for all cash flows, capital gains, capital losses. But it turns out that this one is not as important as the total percentage return. Why? Because everybody starts with different amounts. Everybody's putting in different amounts. And so we want to be able to compare apples to apples. So what we normally do is look at the return on investment measured as a percentage that accounts for all cash flows and capital gains or losses. And this allows us to compare investment alternatives, and it doesn't matter whether we have $100 or $1,000 or $1,000,000, we can say, I did 6% last year, or I did 12%. Okay? Now, the next puppy that you have to keep in your little brain, or your head, while we discuss this, is investment risk, slide number 16. Risk is difficult to measure. There are many ways, but all of them are imperfect. All of them do not really capture the definition of risk as we discussed it in the previous session. The possibility of harm or loss or danger. How do you put a number on that? It's difficult. One popular measure, and the one that we'll be using, is standard deviation. And don't worry, we'll investigate this later in the chapter, and if you have nightmares from your statistics class, if you're still having nightmares, just relax, because we don't compute this. Somebody else does it for us. Standard deviation is the measure of the volatility of an investment. In any given year, there is about a 2/3 chance that the return of an investment will be within one standard deviation of the historical average return. Relax. We'll discuss this. We'll have pictures and graphs. But again, there are no calculations because they are done for us. What you need to know, and we're going to harp on this over and over and over again, especially in the next presentation, is the higher the standard deviation, the more volatile the investment. the greater the variance from the average, from the norm. Okay? And as one student said last semester, I just love it, the volatility is real. You know, as the market was bouncing up and down like crazy, she said, the volatility is real. Yes, it is, especially if you invest in higher risk, higher return assets, like stocks. Slide number 17. So here it is, folks. We will look at each of these in more detail as the semester goes along. Today, we're going to be still flying over our landscape at 35,000 feet. And please do not get bogged down in any of the details that you may read in the book or somebody has told you about or you've read. All I want you to know for this chapter is what is in this presentation. That is the most important thing. And as you'll see, it's really not that hard. You know, you're just describing these things. We're going to get into much, much, much detail about how we quantify them and all the different attributes and characteristics that you need to know about these things. But for now, all you need to know is what are on these slides in the next several slides. So let's continue. Slide number 18. Equity securities. Most people don't use the term equity securities for stocks. They certainly don't use the term common stocks. And it has nothing to do with just common every order. No, it's an old term from when you were a shareholder in common. But the takeaway from this is that they represent ownership in a corporation. Most people think of stocks as these pieces of paper that people trade, and now they're not even paper anymore, it's all electronic. But no, it's real ownership. You own part of the business. Now, for most of us working grunts, we own a tiny little part of the business, but hey, we own a part of the business. And why are businesses in business? To make money. And so you're an investor. What do you receive? Well, you receive two major advantages or two major rewards from owning stocks. Dividends, which are optional payments to shareholders, and capital gains. You know, the shares increase in value. So if the business makes money, they can optionally send you, it's called distribute you, the shareholder, the investor, a payment. And it's normally done every quarter in the United States and some other countries every 6 months, sometimes every year. Are these payments mandatory? No. The company does not have to pay them. They often do with tremendous regularity. Johnson & Johnson and GE and some of these companies have been paying dividends for over 100 years. But they could stop next quarter, there's no guarantee that they're going to do it. Plus, is there any guarantee that the shares are going to increase in value? No. In fact, you know that there's going to be time. There are going to be times when the shares are going to decrease in value. That's the volatility. One advantage that we don't discuss often is the limited liability. And we'll discuss this later on. But if you've taken Business 120, Introduction to Business, you know that corporations are limited liability entities. You, as the investor, are only limited to how much money you have contributed, you have invested. Unlike a sole proprietorship where you and the business are one and the same, and if the business incurs more risk than what it's worth, they're going to come after you. So, limited liability. Now, as we said, are dividends or capital gains guaranteed? No. So it turns out that stocks are risky. Volatility is the euphemism we use for, I lost a whole lot of money. Yeah. When you hear somebody ask their friend, how did that stock turn out? And he says or she says, oh boy, was it volatile. You know what that means? Yeah, they lost their shirt. They bought it for 12 bucks and sold it for 30 cents. Do you know anybody who's done that? I do. I've known him for a long time. In fact, I've known him all my life. It was a really good company, folks. I mean, it was kind of, yeah, right. Historically, stocks have given us the best returns over time. We can, with a lot of data to back us up, say that stocks have returned anywhere between 8 to 12%. Now, what I tell people is 8 to 10. I don't want to get them too excited. I want to temper their expectations. It personally, if I get 8, 9, 10%, I'm a very happy man. Some people shoot for 10, 11, 12%, and some people have done better. But I don't want to get your hopes up too high, and I certainly don't want to do that for my clients and my friends and family who listen to me. You should consider a stock a long-term investment. As we said, I think, in the previous session with Mr. Buffett, the famed investor, he said, you want to hold it for at least 10 years. I say 4, 5 to 10 or more. And there's a little video that is accompanying this the next presentation where Mr. Bogle, Jack Bogle, great interview with Steve Forbes. It's still online, last time I checked. He says, look, you hold it forever. You hold on. It's like you would hold on to a business. You know, if you started a shoe shop or a pizza shop, you'd hold it for a long time. And obviously, you're going to retire someday and you're going to sell these things or pass them on to your heirs. But what about 2008, huh? What was the 2008 definition? Stocks are equity investment instruments designed to lose value. Right? The volatility is real. Right? They had a very difficult time in 2008. Slide number 19. Now, the other side of the coin are fixed income securities, debt instruments, bonds. That's the term everybody uses. But what you really are, folks, is you're buying a loan, as we said in the previous presentation. You are lending your money to a corporation, corporate bonds, or a state and local government municipalities, such as the city of Chula Vista, the state of California, the bridge authority for the Coronado Bay Bridge, or water authorities, or schools, such as Southwestern Community College. And, of course, the granddaddy of them all, the federal government treasury bonds. So why do you lend their money to them? Why does a bank lend you money, right? The bond investors will receive interest and a promise that the loan will be repaid when due. And do most people pay their credit cards and their car loans and their mortgage? Well, yeah, during normal times, they do. These are not normal times, but still, most people are still paying their bills. And the same thing is true with the bonds, with corporate bonds and municipal bonds and treasury bonds. Well, treasuries never default, and even though people are jumping up and down saying the government is completely broke, the treasury will pay its bills, folks, in the near future, at least. Historically, bonds have been much, much less riskier than stocks. But, you're right, less reward. Over the long term, bonds have returned 4, 5, 6% for government and muni bonds, 6, 7, 8% for corporate bonds. They are not returning this now. They're returning less during these difficult times. But that's what you can expect over the long term. Bond investors normally would shoot for about 6% and be happy with that. They're good intermediate term and long term investments for some people. I'm not a big fan of them, as I'll discuss as we go along, and I try to tell you my biases up front, not so that you'll conform to what I believe. No, not at all. So that you'll understand where I'm coming from and realize that everybody is different. And you have to, sketch out your trail, so to speak, and follow some individuals or follow other individuals. And so that's why I tell you right up front my biases. So you understand that, oh, okay, well, Payano, He's not a big bond fan, but no, I like that. I like that stability. I'm very happy with 5-6%. What about 2008? Let's see. 2008, bonds are fixed rate instrument, investment instruments designed to lose value, right? Yeah. Yeah. Normally, stocks and bonds move in counter directions. They are usually negatively correlated, which we'll talk about later on. But in 2008, bonds, except for treasury bonds, bonds were destroyed. Municipal bonds, corporate bonds were just ravaged. Now, did they go down as bad as stocks? No. Stocks went down 30, 40, 50, 60%, some a little bit more if you were in the real high risk stocks. Bonds went down about 15 to 30. That's still a huge drop for bonds. Usually in the worst years for bonds, they'll go down 5 to 8%. But yeah, 2008 was once in a lifetime years for us. Slide number 20. Now, short-term investments. This, at the end of this chapter, the last presentation, last session in this chapter, we will concentrate on short-term investments. The other terms for short-term investments are cash, short-term vehicles, short-term instruments. And as we said in the previous session, what is short-term? Normally up to a year, maybe two, three at the most. The cool thing about short-term investments is that they are usually guaranteed or pretty darn close. Even the ones that are not specifically guaranteed, when things go badly, there's usually a white knight that runs in and says, "Don't worry, we'll make sure your short-term investments are guaranteed." They are very liquid. Many will let you simply write a check. You can write a check off of your short-term investments because you can either move the money right away into your checking account or some will just give you checks. There's a very low risk, almost no risk, of losing your principal. Well, you're already following me here, isn't it? You're not going to get much off of these things. Over the long term, 2 to 4, 5%. Well, what are we getting now? Some are getting, or many, most are getting less than 1%. In fact, I put up on the website already, it's already there, an offer that came in the mail to my wife, who actually has a little bit better credit than I do. 0.9% high yield savings account. Oh, come on. Is this the Monty Python skit or something? Yes, we give high yield here, less than 1%. Oof. Yeah, well, some savings accounts are paying 0.01 or 0.05%, so I guess, that's a big difference. Absolute, no, but in terms of percentage, yeah, it's still nothing. What we say about short-term investments is they are a place to park your money. You'll often hear traders, speculators, aggressive investors, maybe you might want to call them, say, "Hey, you got your money in the market? No, I'm parking it in cash. I'm in a money market. I'm in cash." And they are obviously waiting for a downturn in the market to pick up, shares cheap. Good luck, by the way. We also use them for an emergency fund, which is the darling of financial advisors these days. And we'll have a slide dedicated to this in the last session. What was the 2008 definition for short-term investments? Let's see. Short-term investments are instruments designed to accept what remains of investors' money after they have given up on stocks and bonds. Right? I can't take it anymore! So the market falls 40%. They put their money into the short-term investment, the money market, the CD, the savings account, only to watch the market jump 50, 60%. Yeah, it's called timing the market. Mm-hmm. Okay, slide number 21. Here's some examples of short-term investments, and some of these you already are familiar with. Savings accounts, maybe you have some Series EE or I bonds that were given to you as a child and you, Where are those things? Use them now. Treasury bills, certificates of deposit, money market accounts, money market mutual funds, commercial papers, bankers acceptance notes. We will discuss these in detail in the last session of this chapter. All right, slide number four. Chapter number four, slide number 22. Mutual funds. Oh boy, you've heard of these things, right? You can't help. They're advertised like crazy. The legal term, which I like better, is the investment company. That's the legal term for a mutual fund investment company. This is a company that pools investors' money and invests in a diversified portfolio of securities. Yes, the term mutual, right? Everybody gets together and puts their money, and then these mutual fund managers, they decide what investments to do for you. Investors get two normally wonderful things. Diversification is normally a good thing. And instead of being able to buy five stocks or three bonds or maybe, you know, one piece of property or whatever, the mutual fund can purchase hundreds of stocks. Why? Because they have billions of dollars. There's millions of people putting their money in here. And you get professional money management, which, you know, can be a great thing if they're good money managers, and can be not so great a thing if they're not particularly good money managers. Either way, they get paid. It's a very popular form of investment, and it depends on what they invest in, which it depends on what type of risk you're going to take on and return. And they range from very, very low risk money market mutual funds to high risk speculative risk if you're investing in stocks and unlike assets. What's the 2008 definition? Unless you were in a money market, all fall down. Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. Slide number 23. Here's a wonderful graphic. I made this graphic. I am so proud of my graphic. I'm really good with those stick figures, folks. I make the circles, and sometimes I put the nose in there with the little line that you can drag. Oh, man, what a great nose. Anyway, let's continue. You see, here we are, folks. Here we are. We're the little people. These are the little people. That's us. And more of them are women because they realize that they've got to get their act together. They watch their grandmother, their mother, their great-grandmother, who let the man of the house handle the finances, and he did a really horrible job and left her penniless when he passed on. So the women are realizing, I gotta get my act together here. And we give our $50, $100 a month, or more money if we have it, and we give it to the people in the top hats. They're the mutual fund managers. And more of them are women, folks. Women, right. Because it turns out, it's already been statistically shown, women are better investors. Duh. And why is that? Well, there are many reasons that people put forth, but the statistics show that women do better over time. The major common wisdom is that women are just more patient. Men look at it as a challenge, they think of hitting the home run ball, throwing the Hail Mary pass. Whereas women, we're very happy hitting singles, right? Or getting 5 yards on a whatever analogy you want to use. And what do they do with that money? Well, remember, there are millions of little people giving billions of dollars, so they create this pool of investments. Yes, I know it looks like a potato, I apologize, but it's supposed to be a pool or a pond or whatever. And that's hence the term mutual fund company, right? Mutual. I like the term investment company better because what these people are doing for you are they are making the investments. They take that pool of money and they invest in stocks. Now, they don't buy 5 stocks or 10 stocks. They buy 200. And if they invest in stocks, it's called a stock mutual fund. Isn't that tricky? If they invest in bonds, it's called a bond mutual fund, and they don't buy 3 bonds. They buy 300 or 150. And if they invest in cash instruments, you see the quotes, not really cash, not putting their money under a mattress, they invest in those things that we discussed and we'll discuss in detail later on, the CDs and corporate paper and treasury bills and the like. It's called a money market mutual fund, but usually the mutual fund disappears and people just call it a money market. And what we see here is the hint, the beginnings of the explosion of different type of mutual funds with what is called a balanced mutual fund. A balanced mutual fund invests both in stocks and bonds, hence the term balance, right? And we'll see that explosion in the next chapter, chapter number 4, after this presentation. Americans approximately own 50% of American households own mutual funds, or used to. Yeah, it's less than 50% now, but not much less. I forget the exact number. I have to look it up because it's the new year and the data should be out pretty soon. Slide number. So you got this chart? We'll come back to it. We'll come back to it. Don't worry. Slide number 24. Hybrid investments. Now, we'll spend just a short amount of time on these things, because it turns out that they're really not, first of all, they're not that many of them. They're more for corporations to own, and these are called preferred stocks. They represent ownership like a corporation, but dividends are not considered optional like a bond. So you got the idea? Hybrid, a mixture. Doesn't it sound like something you want, preferred stock as opposed to common stock? Well, it turns out no, you don't really want these. And there are reasons tax related that we'll discuss later on, folks. All you have to know is that they're a hybrid. They are designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments, bonds, with the opportunity for capital growth of equity investment stocks. So it's a mixture, right? And convertible securities are bonds or preferred stocks that can be converted into common stocks. Now, that just means you take your bond and you give it to the company and they give you 10 shares back. That's how it works. Or preferred stock, they give you 5 shares or 20 shares or whatever it is. Doesn't it sound sexy? I mean, convertibles, like convertible car, right? You're just driving down the road with the wind blowing through your hair until the darn thing can't go down or can't come back up again or is leaking or somebody accidentally put their foot through the rag. Yeah, they're a pain in the neck, actually, convertible cars. You know, they're great to look at, but some people love them and wouldn't have anything else. So look, like convertible cars, these things turn out to be not as great as they are hyped up to be. The idea was to give you the advantages of both bonds, the stability, and the advantages of stocks, the opportunity for capital growth. But guess what? Right, they wind up often having the disadvantages of both, right? You know, nothing's free, nothing's easy, right? You want something to have the advantages of both, it's going to wind up sometimes having the disadvantages of both. So we'll spend a very little time on these. But all you have to know right for now, right, is what you see here. All right, good. Okay, now, some other popular vehicles that we'll spend a little bit of time at the end discussing: real estate. What can we get from real estate? It turns out that real estate, it gives us about 7-8% over the long term. Now, wait a minute, the real estate agents are jumping up and down and saying, you're not comparing apples to apples. That's right, we'll discuss that later on. But there are many choices, folks. You don't have to buy a residential home and rent it out. There is commercial property, but oh boy, is that expensive. Raw land, not the best idea unless you know exactly what you're doing and have been in the business for quite some time. And then for most of us, real estate investment trusts. Why? Because they're like a mutual fund. But instead of buying stocks, bonds, or cash, the trust, it's not actually a corporation, they're a different entity, but it looks like a stock to us. They buy properties. And so REITs own shopping centers, and they own apartment complexes, and they own warehouses and office buildings. So they do all the management. You just invest and collect the rewards, which in this case are rent, and if they sell property at a gain, the capital gains. How about precious metals, gold, silver, jewels, art collectibles? Later. People jumping up and down screaming and hollering about gold. Wait until the end of the semester before you actually buy any, alright? I'm not saying you shouldn't buy it, but just understand that gold's not the best investment, folks. Unless the world falls apart, in which case it turns out to be a great investment. Tax advantage instruments, such as limited partnerships and low-income housing projects, they have their place, but most of us are not going to be involved with this. If there is sufficient time and interest, and there usually is, we will look at some of these or all of these, especially real estate, tangible assets. We want to at least give you a hint of what it's like out there. Obviously, real estate is an entire course unto itself, and we teach real estate courses here. By the way, folks, in 2008, right, everybody got clobbered. The real estate investors got destroyed after the run-up from 2002 to about 2000 and early 2007. Real estate just plunged, and so did the commodities, so did the metals and the art and the oil. Oil went to $147 a barrel in the summer of 2008, only to fall to $39 a barrel 8 months or so later. It's now up to about 90 or so, 100. So everybody fell down. People used to say, well, people knew I was invested in the stock market. So, aren't you upset? Aren't you upset? Yeah, I don't feel great about losing 40%. But I feel a whole lot better than the real estate agents who lost 100%, lost everything, and then were still saddled with $100,000, $200,000, $300,000 debt that they probably would never, ever pay off. Yeah, right. That's what we're going through. We're not finished yet. We still have a lot of foreclosures to go. Slide number 26. Okay, derivatives. Now, you notice the question marks around the investments. Are they really investments? Not as far as I'm concerned. And this is where the book tries to really get you all excited about calls and puts and options and futures and commodities and indexes. Stay away from these things. But for now, all you have to know is that derivative assets are speculative securities that derive their value from an underlying security or asset. You understand? That's all you have to know. And if you want to, you can add examples include options and futures. All right? That is it. Many in the financial world, myself included, do not categorize these as investments. They are called speculations, which is a fancy term for gambling. You want to play with these things? Great. But realize that your odds are about the same as Las Vegas. You're probably going to lose. It's just that simple. The derivative speculators did not feel so all alone in 2008. Usually, they are the only ones who are proud to have only lost 30%. I only lost 30% last year. I'm doing great. Yeah, well, they felt in great company in 2008 when bond investors lost 15 to 20 or 30%. Stock investors lost 30, 40, 50%. And real estate investors lost everything. So you understand? That is all you have to know about derivatives. I don't care how much detail the book goes into it. You don't even have... I should strike out the two terms calls and puts on this page. Just know that the examples are options and futures. Slide number 27. So what are we going to emphasize in this course? We're going to spend a lot of time on stocks. Why? Because that's where the action is. That's where the fun is. Because stocks are really very interesting, folks. People lump them all together, but nothing could be further from the truth. There are thousands of companies, and all of them are different. They fit in certain categories, but some don't fit in any category. And you will often find that you gravitate toward the companies and types of industries that excite you. Mm-hmm. And when you invest in stocks, you're an owner. When you invest in bonds, you are a loaner. You are lending your money in what are called fixed income securities. You know how much money you're going to get, providing the bond does not default, which most bonds don't, folks. No matter how bad the headlines are, most companies and municipalities and the federal government pay back their loans. Short-term securities, why do we put our money here? For the short term, because our principal is safe, often guaranteed, and we will spend some time on mutual funds because for the vast majority of people out there, they make the most sense. Your investments are managed on your behalf. So, we'll spend about 2-3 weeks on bonds. As we said, we'll spend about, I didn't say how much, spend usually about 5-6 weeks, sometimes 7 on stocks, 1 session on cash, and about 2 weeks on mutual funds. All right? For the vast majority of investors, these are the most popular and most important financial investment options. Okay, now, slide number 28. This is checking for comprehension. In the face-to-face class, I give the students these little A, B, C, D cards at the university. They have electronic clickers, but we're kind of poor that way. And I check for comprehension. I see, okay, oh, raise up your A, B, C, D cards. So it doesn't really work in the online, especially if you've printed out the slides. By the way, I didn't, if you do print out the slides, I suggest printing them out as a handouts, 4 to a page, or maybe 3 to a page. 9 to a page is a little hard to read. But if you print out 1 to a page, you're going to use up a lot of paper, folks. So that's up to you, of course. Here's a little, so if you printed them out, you already see the answer. But the idea is, okay, look at the slide, then when you click, you'll see the answer if you're viewing the slide as a presentation. What are investment companies that pool investors' money and invest in a diversified portfolio of securities? Investors get diversification and professional money management. Short-term securities, common stocks, bonds, or mutual funds. When you hear the words diversification and professional money management, pool investors' money, you know, right, that's a mutual fund. Investment company is the legal term and the one I prefer, but you're not going to hear people say that unless they're in the industry. They're mostly going to use, everybody's going to use the term mutual fund. Next slide. How about, what are investments that represent ownership in a corporation? Investors receive dividends and capital gains or capital losses. Ownership, you know, right, common stocks. Could they be hybrid securities? Well, yes, but the hybrid securities definition would include something about the other side of the coin, the fixed part, which is not in here. Bonds? No, they're not bonds. Bonds are not ownership. Bonds are loans, and certainly not short-term securities because you don't get capital losses from short-term securities. So this is the common stocks. When people use the term stocks, they're really talking about common stocks. So we often don't even use the term common stocks. We just say stocks. In fact, some of the stockbrokers excited about selling these things. They don't use the word stock. No, use the word business. Use the word corporation and company. You're not investing in stocks. Certainly don't use the word stock market because most people think of it as a casino. Yeah. But that's what they are. They're shareholders in common. Slide number 30. What are investments with very little risk and correspondingly very little return? Often used as a place to park your money or for an emergency fund of 3 to 6 months income. Park your money, little risk, little return, short-term securities. Right. You're not going to lose your money, but then again, especially today, these days, you're not going to make much money at all. In fact, that's part of your assignment, is to go see what they're paying, and boy, Slide number 31. What are fixed income securities that represent loans to corporations, municipalities, state or local governments and agencies, and the federal government? Investors receive interest and a promise to repay the loan. Fixed income loans to corporations, municipalities, bonds, that's what they are, folks, bonds. Bonds are fixed income investments. You know how much money you're going to get when you walk into a bond investment. When you get into a bond investment, providing it doesn't default, which, you know, as we said, they don't. Most don't default. Next slide. What are securities designed to offer the stability of fixed income investments with the opportunity for capital growth of equity investments? Examples include preferred stock and convertible bonds. So let's see. Not the river, the common stock. All right. When you're blending two things together, those are hybrid securities, right? The stability of fixed income investments, stability of bonds, with the opportunity for the capital growth, the capital appreciation of stocks, equities. The best or the worst of both worlds, right? So you get the advantages of both and the disadvantages of both. Slide number 33. What are speculative securities that derive their value from an underlying security or asset? Examples include options contracts and futures contracts. So you're not really investing in the underlying asset. You're investing in something, or should we say speculating in something, that derives its value. Derivative, right? Exactly. You can make a lot of money, and folks, you can lose a lot of money. More likely, you will lose. And that's it. That's all I want you to know for now about derivatives. All right, that's all we need to know about derivatives, and stay away from them too. But we'll talk about these at the end, believe it or not, of this semester, is when we will turn our attention to derivatives in detail. Slide number 34. Now, number 34 is not A, B, C, D. It's just asking you. I want you to know these numbers too. Remember, they're not hard and fast, but what are reasonable long-term expectations of returns from the following investments? If we have a long-term perspective, what can we reasonably expect from stocks? This is what you tell people. Stocks, what do you remember what it was? Right, 8 to 10. The truth is some have done better, but let's stick with 8 to 10, or even though I wrote down here 8 to 12. You can know that sometimes you can do better than 10%. But don't tell your friends and family that. Don't get them too excited. Tell them 8 to 10. Bonds, less risk, less return, right? 4 to 5, 6% for muni bonds and federal government bonds, treasuries. 6, 7, 8% for corporate bonds. Now, are they paying that much now? No, they're paying less than the historical norm. How about short-term securities? 2 to 5%? Less than that. Well, over the long term, we should tell people 2, 3, 4%, but hey, now they're paying almost nothing. Now, how about mutual funds? Well, you don't know. Why? Because you have to know what the mutual fund invests in. If the mutual fund invests in stocks, well, then it should return about 8, 9, 10% bonds for, you know, it depends what the mutual fund invests in. If it invests in short-term securities, nothing. You're right. Well, that's what they're giving you, 0.01%. Some are literally giving you nothing. They're saying, look, you know, we're not making any money off of these things. So even though most of them are not making any money off of the mutual funds right now because the interest rates are so low, so they'll pay you 0.01% just to make you happy. Well, some of them are saying, we're not going to play this game. We're not making anything, and neither are you. You're getting 0% because we're losing money off of these things. How about hybrid securities? We don't know. It's a mixture of bonds and stocks, so you figure you get a mixture, but hey. And then derivatives, it should be a minus sign. Minus, we don't know. Some people claim to get 20% per month. Wrong. There's a possibility to do that, but it's more likely you're going to lose 20% per month. So we put a big question mark there. What I hope you have seen is that this information is really not that difficult, folks. It may be tempered by your exposure to material that you've already seen on the news, or you've listened to people talk about stocks and calls and puts and bonds and credit default swaps and all these exotic things that you don't even have to worry about. For this class, we start from the beginning. This is what I want you to know. Now, I'm serious. I want you to know this cold. So if I called you up at 2 o'clock in the morning, woke you up out of a deep sleep, and said, what is a mutual fund? It's a pooled investment. It's an instrument where investors pool their money and get diversification and professional money management. You understand? I want you to know this so that if somebody said, well, what is the bond anyway? You would immediately say, well, you're investing in a loan and you're lending your money to the federal government or a corporation or a municipality, and you're getting interest and you're getting a promise to repay your principal that you gave them. And they're not really that risky. They're actually fairly stable. You could speak to the most important points about the investment. And I don't want you to get into details now. I don't want you to get into the details now. Make sense? You can do this. And I hope you're enjoying it. All right? Now, when we come back in the third session, we are going to come back to this idea of risk and return and really hammer away at the what we can expect emotionally as we begin the investment process and how we will react to those inevitable downturns often colors our long-term results. It, more importantly than anything else is our emotions. Okay? So I'm looking forward to the next session, seeing you in the next session. Go back over this, study this, make sure you know this information. So as I said, if I wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning, it'll be there. See you next time!